Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, February 15th, 2018. I want to ask you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, the addresses, the emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. The Earth First Journal has once again extended their deadline for the spring issue. This time it's March 1st. Hey folks, we're sorry for all the false alarms. First, we made a newswire post declaring the submission deadline for our spring issue was February 8th. Then we put out an email saying it was extended to February 15th. And now, March 1st is the real and final deadline for submissions for the spring issue. Sorry for the waffling, they write. We realized too late that because of the 2018 Earth First Organizers Conference, which happens later in the month than we are used to, our magazine schedule had to be slightly shifted into the future, which means you all have a little more time to send in content for us to consider. Those of you who are already submitted content, thank you. We appreciate it. For those of you who just missed the deadline or wanted to submit something but didn't have the time, you've got the time, so send us your stuff. We're looking for artwork, high-resolution photographs, poetry and other creative writing, critical analysis, reflections, how-to guides, reviews, and especially updates from your campaigns. If you have any kind of art or writing that puts the Earth first, we want it. We also welcome letters to the editors. Our letter to the editor section wouldn't exist if you don't write us. Please limit your articles to 4,000 words and keep reviews between 250 and 500 words. Not sure about your writing skills and never been published before? Never even written before? No worries. Our editorial collective strives to include a variety of voices with a range of experiences and skills, and we especially encourage writing from activists. Send your articles as attached documents. Please don't copy-paste them into the email unless absolutely necessary for security reasons to collective@earthfirstjournal.org. That's collective@earthfirstjournal.org. Or you could mail your article to Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 964, Lake Worth, Florida, 33460. That address, once again, Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 964, Lake Worth, Florida, 33460. And if you didn't get all that information, go to the Earth First Newswire and you can get it there. And the Earth First Winter Rendezvous is coming up with workshops, training as a movement building February 23rd to the 26th in southern Mississippi. If you want more information, contact BYOBEF at riseup.net. That's BYOBEF at riseup.net. Or you can go to bellyofthebeastef.wordpress.com. An autonomous group of Earth Firsters has been busy all winter long searching for a small corner of Swamplandia down in the dirty Gulf South that might be willing to host the finest gathering of scumbags ever to assemble since like 7 months ago. And to our surprise, we did manage to find the perfect place, rural and accessible, beautiful and wild, amphibian and terrestrial, noisome and moist. From the wetland bayous of the Gulf Coast, we are excited to invite Earth Firsters and like-minded accomplices from all the corners of Turtle Island to join us for the 2018 Winter Rendezvous and Organizers Conference, February 23rd through the 28th. And here's the schedule on Monday. On the 23rd is the beginning of the rendezvous, which will last through the weekend, and you can have a good time there. But starting on Monday, February 26th, they'll have the organizers' conference, and that's pretty much down to earth, getting down to movement business. And to get information about how to get there, once again, send email to BYOBEF. At riseup.net, that's BYOBEF at riseup.net, or visit the webpage bellyofthebeastef.wordpress.com. Forest Defense Now, as part of the Cascadia Forest Defenders, is having a climbing camp March 26th through April 1st. Cascadia Forest Defenders invites you to a week-long climb camp. Come to spend time in the woods learning how to ascend and descend a static rope, traverse between trees, use a crossbow for tree entry, build and set a platform in a tree, build road blockades involving aerial structures, and much more. Once again, the dates are March 26th through April 1st. They want you to RSVP because a space is limited. And you'll get information on how to get there. And that is forestdefensenow@gmail.com. That email address, once again, forestdefensenow@gmail.com. You can also go to www.forestdefensenow.com for more information. Once again, the climbing camp in Cascadia is March 26th through April 1st. And coming up is a public meeting to save the Matol. It's going to be happening on March 6th. That's a Tuesday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Outer Space, 11th and M Streets in Arcata, California. Save the Matol's Ancient Forest is hosting. They'll have all kinds of information, campaign updates, review of the logging plans, how to get the community involved, and fundraising events. All that going to be planned, taking place on Tuesday, March 6th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Outer Space, 11th and M Street in Arcata, California. Save the Matol. And action alert, Humboldt Redwood Company is proposing to build a new logging road above the headwaters of Sulphur Creek. This is an attempt to bypass blockades and log some of the largest remaining stands of old-growth Douglas fir in California. This new road in the Matol River watershed would damage waterways and requires excavating steep, geologically unstable hillsides directly adjacent to old-growth grove that activists fought to protect in 1998. Help us protect this ancient forest. Public comment is open until February 20th. Contact the California Department of Forestry and let them know you oppose Major Amendment Number 6 to the Long Ridge Cable THP1-12.026 HUM. And you can send your emails to Santa Rosa Public Comment at fire.ca.gov. That's Santa Rosa Public Comment at fire.ca.gov. And if you want more information, go to Save the Matol blog page. And from the Earth First Newswire, we read that a court is urged to sanction Dakota Access Pipeline lawyers for suing Earth First Movement and abusing the legal system in this story written by Kevin Gostola of Shadow Proof. The Center for Constitutional Rights has asked a federal court to sanction Energy Transfer Partners and Energy Transfer Equity for misusing the legal system when it sued Earth First for federal racketeering to suppress activism against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Kasowitz Benson Torres, the law firm which represents President Donald Trump, attempted to sue the movement Earth First in August. However, Earth First is an idea and cannot be sued. Nevertheless, the law firm sent a complaint to the Earth First Journal, even though the publication was not named in the lawsuit. Sanctions, according to CCR, require lawyers accused of offenses receive advance notice of a motion so that they can have an opportunity to withdraw improperly filed papers. Center for Constitutional Rights served Kasowitz Benson Torres as well as the Vogel Law Firm, a co-counsel, with the sanctions motion. The lawsuit was not withdrawn, but without explanation, Vogel Law Firm no longer represents Energy Transfer Partners or Energy Transfer Equity. Massive corporations have the financial resources to file frivolous lawsuits and crush advocacy through the sheer weight of litigation, even if they do not ultimately win in court, CCR senior staff attorney Rachel Mirapol suggested. Earth First Journal editor Ryan Hartman stated, Trump's lawyers were given an opportunity to withdraw papers they knew were improper and avoid sanctions. Their refusal leaves no doubt that the aim of this lawsuit is not to address racketeering, but to scare activists opposing pipelines into silence. It's not working. CCR has requested attorney's fees and an order from the judge requiring Casawit, Benson Torres, and the Vogel Law Firm to share in writing with each of their attorneys the relevant federal rule of civil procedure and case law indicating that ideas and social movements cannot be sued. As previously reported, the filings on behalf of the energy corporations acknowledge Earth First is not an organization. They recognize that it had no structure or leadership. It is a convenient banner that anyone can just use that name. Their suit failed to articulate how much a broad-based social movement lacking formal membership and or entity structure of any kind could be amenable to a suit. Prior attempts to sue movements like Black Lives Matter failed because no one can sue a social movement. There is no reason anyone should be able to sue the Earth First movement. And in Australia, Lock the Gate Alliance fights plans to cut an endangered forest for a coal mine. In this story from Adam Morton of The Guardian, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Coal mining companies were given approval to clear nearly 10% of what is now a critically endangered forest in New South Wales, Australia's Hunter Valley, over the past decade, according to evidence before a government commission. It has prompted calls for politicians and bureaucrats to place greater weight on cumulative damage before giving developments the green light. Central Hunter Valley eucalypt forest and woodland was listed as critically endangered in 2015 after it was found 70% had been already lost, and what remained in the forest was highly fragmented. A federal government assessment found the area was vital habitat for 11 nationally threatened species, including the Regent Honeyeater, Bush-tailed Rock Wallaby, and Spotted-tailed Quoll, and important to the health and well-being of local residents. The Lock the Gate Alliance is contesting a state planning department recommendation to allow mine operators Glencore and Peabody Energy to clear 250 hectares, that's about 600 acres, of the endangered area to allow two existing coal mines to become one open-cut mine. The Alliance says assessment of what is known as the United Wamba open-cut mine did not properly factor in the cumulative impact of nine previous decisions to allow miners to clear 3,109 hectares over 7,000 acres of lowland forest, about 9% of what remained. Two of the approvals allowing the clearance of more than 600 hectares of roughly 1,500 acres have been made since the habitat was listed as critically endangered. Speaking before a Planning Assessment Commission hearing on Tuesday, Lock the Gate State Coordinator Georgina Woods said the federal government had warned the habitat could be extinct in 40 to 60 years. This is a scandal, she said. The planning department never says the impact of a coal mine in this area is so great that it should not go ahead. The result is towns are being depopulated, bush bulldozed, and the alluvial aquifer drawn down 10 meters, roughly 35 feet. The Hunter region has lost too much of its bushland already. Promises of rehabilitation decades into the future cannot compensate for clearing wildlife habitat now. And environmentalists are the latest targets for arrest in Iran, and one just died in prison in this story by Rashank Bengali and Ramin Mustahim of the LA Times, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Iranian academics and environmentalists are demanding answers from authorities after several colleagues were arrested on espionage charges and one, a prominent professor, died in prison. Kavus Sayed Imami, a sociology professor who also held Canadian citizenship, hanged himself while in solitary confinement in Tehran's Evin prison, where political prisoners are usually held, Iranian judicial officials said over the weekend. His family and colleague doubt the government's account that he killed himself. Sayed Imami had been arrested 2 weeks earlier along with seven other environmental activists who were accused of using their work as a cover for passing intelligence to foreigners, officials said. The arrests were not publicly disclosed until Sayed Imami's family on Saturday announced his death. It was the fourth case in recent weeks following anti-government protests that swept the country of a prisoner dying in custody in what officials labeled as suicide. They say he committed suicide, his son Ramin Sayed Imami, a musician who goes by the stage name King Ram, told Instagram, "I still can't believe this. The news of my father's passing is impossible to fathom." Kavus Sayed Imami was arrested on Wednesday, the 24th of January, and the news of his death was released to my mother, Mariam on Friday the 9th of February. I still can't believe this. The environmentalist who was arrested January 24th appeared to have been caught up in an ongoing crackdown by hardline forces against the Iranians who hold dual citizenship in Western countries. Thousands of pro-reform activists, members of minority religious groups, and other presumed opponents of the Shiite Muslim theocracy were also detained after anti-government protests erupted December 28th. The Center for Human Rights in Iran, an advocacy group based in New York, said Monday that Seyed Amami's family had called for an independent autopsy, though it wasn't immediately clear whether one had been performed. The center said the family was under intense pressure to immediately bury Seyed Amami at a private funeral without receiving any independent and medically corroborated information on the cause of his death. If they have nothing to hide, they could allow the family to gain possession of the body and do an independent autopsy, the center's executive director, Hadi Gamem, said in an interview. The public prosecutor in Tehran, Abbas Jafari Dolotabadi, said Sunday that Seyed Amami killed himself after confessing to wrongdoing, but did not offer further details. Since he knew that many confessions had been made against him and he himself had made confessions, he was unfortunately committed suicide in prison, Dolotabadi was quoted as saying by the Tasnim news agency. Seyed Amami was co-founder of the Persian Wildlife Heritage Foundation, a non-governmental organization that fights for the protection of indigenous animals, including the rare Asiatic cheetah, of which there are believed to be only 50 remaining in Iran. Amami was educated in the United States in the 1970s, earning a master's degree at the University of Ohio, his son wrote, and in recent years taught religion and sociologies at Tehran's Imam Sadeh University. Several other people with ties to the foundation were also arrested, according to reports in Iranian media. Among them were Human Jokar, vice president of the board and head of the cheetah desk at Iran's Department of Environment, and Murad Tabaz, an Iranian-American businessman and board member. And in the United Kingdom, Fitzwilliam Hunt smashes up a car of Hunt saboteurs. In this story from the Hunt Saboteurs Association of Britain, as found in the Earth First Newswire, North Cam's Hunt Sabs came under violent attack from followers of the Fitzwilliam Milton Hunt. After a successful day preventing hunting at the Oakland Hunt in Bedfordshire, North Combs checked an unknown meat location of the Fitzwilliam Hunt. Upon finding the hunt, the North Cam's vehicle was surrounded and blocked in by several four-wheel drive vehicles just outside of Lutton near Huntingdon. One vehicle collided with the North Cam's car after racing up alongside on the verge and driving across the lane in front of the moving Hunt Sab vehicle. Several Hunt supporters got out of their vehicles and used heavy implements to smash the windscreen, side windows, and rear window of the North Cam's car. Lacerations from broken glass were caused to the occupants, who then managed to get out of the situation, but were pursued at high speed through country lanes by their assailants, before finally driving to Peterborough Police Station to make full statements and submit video evidence for prosecution. Lee Moon, a spokesperson for the Hunt Saboteur Association, stated, "The Fitzwilliam Hunt is under increasing pressure from hunt saboteurs and will soon be in court to answer charges of illegal hunting. Time and again we see hunts resorting to violence when decent folks stop their illegal hunting. These people are fools because we will never be deterred by acts of violence, and in fact it only proves how effective we're being and spurs us on to greater efforts. Whether the police decide to act or not, North Cam SABs will have the backing of other SAB groups to ensure justice is done." And in Germany, the Trabur walled occupation has blocked airport expansion for over a month, in this story from Hambach Forest, as found in the Earth First Newswire. Plans to expand Frankfurt's airport third terminal and clear 6 hectares, roughly 15 acres, of mixed forest for the motorway connection have been put on hold for over a month long now by a forest tree sit occupation. Trabur Wald is between Zeppelinheim and Mordorf and Waldorf on the edge of Frankfurt, is now home to a group of activists living in 3 platforms and a treehouse connected by walkways with multiple banners bringing attention to the climate pollution and noise impact of the airport. Trabur Wald occupation joins Grow Heathrow in London and ZAD in Notre Dame des Landes in France as a direct action outpost blocking the constant expansion and support of the airline industry and its mega projects despite their impact on the climate. Constituting over 8% of global warming's effect and projected to double by 2040, airports decimate and uproot local communities and detract from ground-level public transportation, offering a way for upper and upper-middle-class persons to travel while decimating and uprooting local communities. The occupation is receiving quite a bit of local support with Sunday supporter gatherings and weekly Monday demonstrations at Terminal 1 of the airport. The long history of opposition to the airport expansion started here in the late 70s and became the catalyst for a German ecological movement with thousands blocking the roads and the forest. The airport struggle was suppressed with a massive amount of police violence and brutality. However, the movement still resurfaced with the forest occupation in 2008 and continues to this day at Treberer Wald. And more information can be found at the Earth First Newswire. And court sides with Arctic seals losing their sea ice habitat to climate change. The oil industry pushed back on Endangered Species Act protection for the seals, but an appeals court says there's enough scientific evidence to support this threat in this story by Sabrina Shankman of Inside Climate News. A federal's appeals court moved on Monday that Arctic ringed seals must be protected under the Endangered Species Act because of their reliance on sea ice, which is rapidly disappearing as the planet warms. The seals, named for the light-colored circles that dot their coats, build layers on the surface of the sea ice to birth and protect their young. That puts them, like other species that rely on the ice, in a precarious position as it vanishes. This major victory gives ringed seals vital protections in the face of climate change and melting sea ice, said Kristen Munsell, an attorney from the Center for Biological Diversity, who argued the case. Protecting the seals means guarding their habitat, and that could impinge on oil and gas operations in Alaska's water, which the state relies on for revenue. The protected status comes with the requirement that the federal government designate areas as critical habitat for the seals. That could complicate efforts by the industry and by the state and federal government to increase development in the area. The ultimate protection for Arctic habitat requires ending the emissions of fossil fuel use entirely, an ambition that has so far eluded the world. The Arctic has been seeing record lows in the extent of sea ice for this time of year. January 2018's ice extent was even less than January 2017, when it was at a record low for the month. There was roughly 42,500 square miles less ice this year than in 2017, an area of missing ice about the size of Virginia. And January's ice extent is more than 5 million square miles below the historical average for the month from 1981 to 2010. And in Germany, a symbol of division is reborn as a sprawling nature reserve. The Green Belt is one of Europe's great conservation success stories in this story by Matt Hickman of the Mother Nature Network. Although the Berlin Wall came crashing down on November 9, 1989, there's another important milestone for reunified Germany that was ushered in this month. As of February 5, 2018, the heavily fortified concrete barrier that divided the German capital beginning in 1961 has now been down longer than it was up, 28 years, 2 months, and 27 days. That being said, it's sometimes easy to forget that the physical and ideological divide between the East and West wasn't limited to just a famous 90-mile-long wall in Berlin itself. Predating the wall by 16 years and located nearly 100 miles to the east, the inner German border was a true physical manifestation of the Iron Curtain, an 870-mile-long frontier that ran the entire length of the divided country from the Baltic Sea in the north to the former Czechoslovakia in the south. On one side of the 650-foot-wide strip of land stood the Federal Republic of Germany. On the other, just beyond, an extensive network of dog runs, minefields, concrete watchtowers, bunkers, booby traps, and forbidding electrified barbed wire fences stood the German Democratic Republic, the communist dictatorship that remained firmly in the grasp of the Soviet Union until the dissolution of the Eastern Bloc. Remnants of the death strip that once severed Germany still exists, so-called because hundreds of East Germans perished while attempting to flee the GDR for less totalitarian pastures. Many of the old watchtowers, fortifications, and short stretches of fence have been preserved. Here, history, no matter how painful, hasn't been paved over and replaced with shopping malls and tract housing. As such, the scars of a divided Germany remain. But what unusual and beautiful scars they are. Almost the entirety of the inner German border has been reclaimed by Mother Nature as part of a sprawling wildlife reserve and outdoor recreation area known as the Greenbelt. Encompassing large swaths of undisturbed countryside and farmland in addition to the border zone, in some ways the Greenbelt, often described as a living monument to reunification and a memory landscape, remains no man land given the wide variety of plants and animals and many rare and endangered that positively rule there. And fracking has been tied to reduced songbird nesting success in this story from the American Ornithological Society publications. The Central Appalachian region is experiencing the country's most rapid growth in shale gas development, or fracking, but we've known almost nothing about how this affects the region's songbird populations until now. A new study demonstrates the nesting success of the Louisiana water thrush, a habitat specialist that nests along forested streams where the potential for habitat degradation is high, is declining at sites impacted by shale gas development in northwestern West Virginia. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon. That's Friday at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You could also tune in to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., KHCF 89.9 in Morgan's Hill and Gilroy, California, WLSL 92.7 Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, KGIG 104.9 Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California, all rebroadcast the Earth First Update. Check their websites for time and day. You could tune in online to the Grateful Dread Public Radio. That's GDPRRevolution.com. Once again, GDPRRevolution.com, Sundays at 2 a.m. Central Time. Or you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, for all.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous edition of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and rebroadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.